going?
The pleasure of introducing my dear friend Chris as our speaker. Chris is from New Orleans.
I
my mom told me, like, I had sips of daiquiris when I was a kid and beers and stuff like that. And I remember one time trying a beer and spitting it out because I thought it tasted horrible. And I got invited at 14 to a freshman football party. So I conned $20 out of my parents and went to this gas station, and there was a homeless guy outside. So I handed him $20, and he came out with a bottle of Taka vodka. I don't know if y'all know what Taka vodka is. Yeah. So I thought I paid $20 for some really good vodka. I thought that I paid for this, like, high class, top of the shelf, you know, great vodka. I found out different. So I show up to this party, right, and nobody wanted to drink the alcohol that I brought, right? And I was bringing this because, like, I wanted to be the cool guy, right? They were drinking out of the keg and whatever else they had. So me and my friend who went together, right, we both, you know, fixed drinks. You know, I'd seen my parents drink screwdrivers, right, so it was like some orange juice, and I put a little bit of vodka in. He did the same thing. The difference between the two of us is, right, like, I took that drink, right, and immediately this weight that I had on my shoulders was gone. You know, I can remember exactly how it felt going down, this warmth that just came over me. You know, I just felt this incredible feeling from that first drink. So what did I do? I fixed another, right? And then I fixed another. And then I felt like I could talk to the pretty girls at the party. And I could go talk to the varsity football players. You know, like, I finally felt like I fit in. Like, I finally felt like, you know, I had arrived. And then I get home and I redecorate my parents' bathroom. You know, my mom, like, asked me if I was drunk, and I'm like, no, I think somebody spiked something or whatever. You know, like, I don't know what's going on. You know? And I woke up the next morning, and I swore that I was never drinking vodka again. Not that I was never drinking again, but that I was never drinking vodka again. Well, my parents happened to be going out of town that next weekend. And this is, like, at the age of 14, right? So I thought it'd be cool if I threw a party and invited all these people over, you know? And so I threw a party, had a bunch of people over. I, again, got tequila this time. I got super drunk off of that. Again, like, I like to redecorate things when I get drunk. If you don't know what that means, I'm throwing up all over the place, right? So my parents' bedroom this time, you know, right, is what happened. And, you know, they got home, and they're like, what happened? I'm like, I think I had some bad tacos. So, like, I'm trying to think of any excuse to, like, not let them know that I'm drinking. You know, and here's another part of my story, right? So at the age of 14, right, like, drugs are a part of my story. It's just how it is, you know? At the age of 14, it was a lot easier for me to get drugs than it was for me to get alcohol, right? Because the guy at the gas station cared about how old I was, but the drug dealer didn't give a damn, you know? But the thing is, every time that I got high, you know, or drunk, I was always searching that first feeling that I got from the very first time that I drank. Mm-hmm. And this continued for the next couple of years, right? I went from being, you know, like a really high grade point average student to where, like, I'm dropping out of high school, you know. I, you know, went from being, you know, pretty popular to where, like, I'm hanging out with people that, you know, like, at 16, 17, I really shouldn't be, you know, hanging out with. Constantly fighting with my parents, constantly ruining friendships, ending friendships, you know. It was bad, you know. And so when I dropped out of high school, started running again with another wrong crowd. Things got worse. The girl that I was seeing left me. And this at the time was the love of my life, and we'd only been dating for like a month. But here's the thing though, right? Like, at that point, like, I threatened suicide, you know? And I was serious about it. I called my mom up. She was out of town. And I threatened suicide. And my stepdad at the time, who I hated and despised, could not stand him. We fought constantly. Broke the door down to my bedroom and sat with me that night, you know, and made sure that I was okay. And, you know, the next day, my mom, of course, comes home. And I confess to everything that I had been doing. All the drugs, all the drinking. You know, saying that I was going to this party when I really wasn't, you know, or not a party, going to this movie when I was really going to this party, or whatever, you know. And my mom's like, you should call your grandfather. I'm like, why should I call my grandfather? Well, so me and my grandfather, and my mom and him, we all didn't really have a relationship for a while. And then my grandfather made amends because he's sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. And made amends to my mom. And so my mom knew that he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So at 16, I called my grandfather up, and he suggested I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I go to an AA meeting. At this time, I had a mohawk that was about 7 or 8 inches high. I had a face full of piercings.
Yeah.
Already started getting tattoos, and wore a black leather jacket, combat boots, and black pants, and I was terrified. Also, by the way, this was. Also, by the way, this was August in South Louisiana. So, I show up to my first ever meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, dressed like this. And I'm terrified. I am absolutely terrified. Here I am with this outer exterior of being this, hard-ass punk rock dude, and I am terrified to walk into this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and there was a guy doing his job in Alcoholics Anonymous and was a greeter. So if any of you have ever greeted at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, thank you. Because this guy sat there and talked to me for about 10 to 15 minutes and helped me walk into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I come in and I see God on the wall, and I'm this like atheist punk rock dude, and I'm just like, yeah, this isn't gonna happen. For some odd reason though, like, I got invited after the meeting to go eat, and I was like, I don't have money, somebody bought my meal for me, and I also was able to bump cigarettes off of these people because I was 16, so I really couldn't buy packs on my own. So I was like, okay, cool, this is cool, I can do this. But here's the thing, right? So I went to meetings. I had a sponsor in name, but I never really worked steps with them, Like, we'd do a third step, and I'd disappear, right? And then I'd get a new sponsor, and we'd do a third step, and I'd disappear. And that's how it was for 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And on the exterior, things were great, right? Like, I got a job, I got promoted, I was a store manager, had a fiance, had my own place. On the exterior, things were great. On the inside, I wanted to die, right? Like, I wanted to die. At one point, my friends, started raising their hands to sponsor people because they had, over a year of sobriety. And back then, it was like, hey, anybody with over a year of sobriety, you can sponsor people, please raise your hand. So I started raising my hand with these people, right? I started sponsoring guys, but not really, because, they would ask me, when are we going to work steps? And I'd be like, oh, we'll work steps when you're ready, right? That's how I did it for 4 years, right? Like, I stayed dry in AA for 4 years, and never really worked steps, and never truly sponsored somebody and got to experience what that was like. And after 4 years, I was more suicidal than I had ever been in my life. And the fiance had left me. The apartment was disgusting. So what did I do? I did a geographical, right? I took a transfer with work, and I went to Lake Charles. I did this. In that time, I went to one meeting, right? And all I was doing in Lafayette was just going to young people's meetings. I wasn't doing anything else. So I went to this one meeting, because they don't have young people's meetings in Lake Charles. And everybody was like 3 times my age, and I was like, maybe I don't need this, And so I managed to stay a little bit drier for a little bit longer, but not even going to meetings anymore. And on my 21st birthday, I was working about 80 hours a week in the mall. I was a store manager for a shoe store. And on my 21st birthday, the people at the store next to me found out, which was Buckle, and they were like, hey, we should go shoot some pool for your birthday. I'm like, that sounds cool, right? I'm like, we'll go shoot some pool. So we show up at this bar in Lake Charles, and it's called Crystals. I walk in, and the guy's dressed in drag. And this is my first time ever going to a bar, ever, by the way. Like, I'd never been in a bar before this, right? And I walk into this bar, and the guy's dressed in drag. I'm like, okay, that's a little weird and different, but whatever, And walk into the bar, and I'm like, oh, it's a gay bar, that's cool, I still felt a little out of place, But I started drinking Cokes, right, while we were shooting pool. Like, I ordered a Coke, and then I ordered another Coke, and then I ordered another Coke. And eventually, like, you know, just like in the big book where it talks about, like, whiskey and milk, like, you know, it was like, hey, you know, like, one Pabst Blue Ribbon doesn't sound like a bad idea. You know, like, why not? So I drank that one Pabst Blue Ribbon. And then I drank another Pabst Blue Ribbon. And then I drank another, you know. To where the next day, like, I woke up from a blackout at my apartment, you know, and I'm like, how the hell did I get home, you know? I go downstairs, my car is there, there's no damage to it, and I'm just like, okay, not so bad, right? So I started bartending at the bar, right? And, you know, started drinking pretty regularly again, and here's the thing, right, this is how I know I'm an alcoholic now, right? Like I told you, like, drugs are a part of my story. Because from before I was 21, after I turned 21 and I get all the alcohol that I wanted, it's pretty much all I did, you know. I drank, like, probably a bottle of Jaeger a day or a bottle of Captain a day, like, no problem whatsoever. And I did that for a pretty good period, and things were great. Like, things were fine. Like, I didn't really, like, have any problems. Yeah, I'd wake up with a hangover, you know, but work was still getting done. My job was getting done. And I was having a good time. And then I woke up one day throwing up blood. And I go to the hospital. And I show up at the hospital. And they're like, oh, you're 21. There's no way you're throwing up blood. Right? The doctor told me. I'm like, okay. So he gives me a cocktail for a thing called GERD. So I take that. And I go home. Well, then I start throwing up congealed blood eventually. And that night. So I go to a different hospital. Didn't go back to the same one. I lost a lot of blood, and they asked me if there was anybody I wanted to call, or for them to call, so I gave them my mom's number, and my dad's number. My mom had just gotten back from being overseas, I think that day, and I wake up the next day, and I see you with a tube through my nose, and then my stomach pumping blood, and my mom's there. And I remember the look on her face, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't this like, I'm disappointed in you, or that, like, I can't believe you did this, or, you know, or anything of hatred or anything like that. She was terrified. You know, like, my mom was terrified. So I took a demotion with work, and I went back to New Orleans. And fear sobered me up for a bit, you know? But I still didn't go, well, I lied. I went to one meeting at that time, just one. It was a midnight meeting, and it was a candlelight meeting, so I showed up after the lights went out, right? And I left before the lights came back on. And I did share in that meeting, and I lied and said I had about 7 years of sobriety. And then I left. And I was a complete tyrant at that month of not drinking. I treated my mom like crap. I treated my new stepdad like crap. I treated my little sister like crap. I treated my little brother like crap. I was a horrible, horrible person. What it was is I had untreated alcoholism. You know, and I'm not drinking on top of it, right? So, like, I am a tyrant. I am ripping and roaring all kinds of nasty things to these people. I lost my job, you know. Yeah, it just wasn't good. And after a month, like, I couldn't take it anymore. So, like, I couldn't drink in my parents' house because my parents are Muslim, and so I'm not allowed to have alcohol in that house. But my aunt and my uncle, who lived on the North Shore, right in Slidell, drank like a fish. So I knew I could go over there. So I conned my way into their house and started drinking again. And things were okay again for a little while, you know, like, things were fine. I got a new job, got promoted to that job, then got offered another job. I wound up going to work for Walmart, became like an assistant manager with them, and, you know, had my own place again, and things were going good. And then my drinking again got out of control, right? There was times where I'd be able to control how much I drank, and then eventually, though, like, it would get out of control. And so on Black Friday of 2009, I show up to work drunk, the assistant manager at this Walmart, And our entire Lumen Express department was super backed up, and I was certified and knew how to do that. So I went to go help them out, right? And I went to go lift a car, and I didn't put the lifts right, and rear end falls down, and about $6,000 of damage to a vehicle. And you know, they pull me into the office, and they're like, "Hey, insurance is going to cover that. You know, everything's fine. We just need you to take, you know, a breathalyzer and a drug test." And I said, "No thanks." So they let me go. And but the thing is, they gave me like all my vacation pay and every like all of my sick time and everything. So like I left and had like a pretty good like sum of money. I had a friend who had moved to Nashville at the time. So again, I was trying to do another geographic. And me and her used to party together really, really hardcore. Well, she had a kid, and I'm up there drinking, and she told me I had to go. She's like, "I can't have you like this around my child." And I was like, "What are you talking about? We used to party this all the time." And yeah, just she couldn't have me up there. So I come back to New Orleans on Christmas Eve, right? And I conned my way back into my parents' house, you know, and I managed to stay dry for 6 days. And again, I am a complete and utter ass to everybody. And after that 6 days, or 7 days, whatever, it was New Year's Eve, right? New Year's Eve, 2009. I go to this New Year's Eve party. I go hang out with some friends. And so here's the thing. I have a condition called Barrett's esophagus. Pretty much what it is, like, I'll get ulcers in my esophagus. You know, my esophagus will produce stomach acid. It can get pretty, pretty nasty. And so in order for me to drink like I wanted to drink, like, I was eating, like, 10 Zantac at a time. Yeah. And so I go to this party, and I forget to take that Zantac. And I start drinking. And I wound up in the bathroom throwing up, and I'm afraid that I'm going to start throwing up blood because I'm throwing up a bunch of stomach acid at this point. And and I say a prayer for the first time in a long time, and it was a sincere prayer, right? And it wasn't like, "God, I'll do this if you can do this," or "God, stop having this happen." You know, it was "God, help me," right? A simple "God, help me." You know, and I woke up the next morning and I had a moment of clarity for the first time. See, before this, I had tried to get sober before this numerous times. I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous worked. You know, I went to a sweat lodge twice to try and get sober. Both times, I was drunk on the airplane ride home. I got baptized about 6 or 7 times trying to get sober. You know, sometimes it'd be a day, sometimes I'd be drunk after church. That's how it was. And I just didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous worked, right? Because I sat around for 4 years, right? And I never got it, right? Well, the reason I never got it is because I never had a real sponsor and I never worked the steps. And the next morning, I had a moment of clarity that I needed to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous and give AA a fair chance. And the reason I had this thought, there was a friend of mine who had moved to New Orleans, who was sober in AA and had been sober this whole time. He would come and see me at work, and he would talk to me about how great his life was. He would never question what I was doing, you know, and never tell me that I needed to get sober again or anything like that. He would always talk about how great his life was going and how awesome things were. And so when I woke up, like, the moment of clarity I had was I needed to go back to AA, and I needed to give Todd a call, you know. And so I called Todd. Todd had just moved to Alabama, and so he gave me this other guy's number. Let me rephrase that. I didn't have Todd's number. I MySpaced him first because MySpace was still there. And then I talked to Todd on the phone. So he gave me this guy's number, you know, and so I called this guy, and 30 minutes later, they're picking me up and bringing me to a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember everything from that meeting. I couldn't remember anything really from meetings that I'd been to before. I remember everything. I remember who was moderating, who was chairing, who was sitting where. I remember they didn't have a desire chip. They were out of chips. But it was the New Orleans young person speaking. And it was at Temple Sinai in New Orleans. And
whoop whoop.
And these people just, you know, instead of just like me getting their phone numbers, they took my phone number too. You know, and the next day, you know, my phone was still on silent from the meeting, right? And so like the next day, like I had like 12 missed calls. And this guy had told me he was going to pick me up at 7 o'clock to bring me to another meeting. Well, I never answered my phone, but guess what? This guy still showed up at 7 o'clock to bring me to that meeting, knocking on my door, you know? And that meeting was Three Legacies in New Orleans. And this was a very big book bumper group, right?
Ow!
And before that, like, I never went to meetings that had the big book, right? Or talked about the big book, right? I'd always gone to meetings where they talked about, like, you know, the leaves in their pool. These guys talked about a solution, right? And they talked about, like how, you know, life is good, and, you know, even though things still happen, that, like, they have a relationship with their higher power and have a solution to their problems. It's not alcohol. And somebody shared, and they shared off topic, and, like, this guy cut him off, and I was like, okay, this is where I need to be, right? Like, I need to be around these people. So they invited me to go out to eat after, right? And again, like, I didn't have money because I was unemployed, and they bought that meal for me. And I finally felt like I had a place where I belonged. You know, I finally felt that I was a part of something. Afterwards, right, this guy's like, you're a newcomer. You're not sleeping. I know that. I'm like, right, pretty much. Yeah, sounds about right. So this guy's like, let's go get coffee. So we went to this coffee shop on Oak Street in New Orleans called Zox. And on the way there, I was talking about, I'm like, I guess I need to find a sponsor or something like that. You know, like, I mentioned the word sponsor. He's like, I'm going to be your sponsor. Awesome. Cool. That night at Dot's Coffee House, like, we started going through the book, and I did a third step with that guy that night. You know, like, I got on my knees at that coffee house with him, and I did a third step, and he gave me 5 days to finish my fourth step. Nice.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So I have, at that time, I had about 7 or 8 days. It's like January 9th or 10th, right? And we had a freeze happen in New Orleans. Which is very, very random when it does. So I'm showing up at his house. Zach has no space heater or heater in his apartment, you know. And so I'm huddled, like, with, like, two sweaters on, sharing my fifth step with this guy. And I wish I could tell you, like, I felt better right away from sharing that. I didn't. I felt horrible, right? My first four step was also super tiny, right? Like, it wasn't this huge thing, you know? Like, it was, but what it was enough for me to let God in, right? It was enough for me to get out of the way and let something happen. And, so I share my four step with him, or fifth step, you know? I sit in his apartment for an hour being quiet, not really knowing what the hell's going on, you know? And I make this eighth step list. So I'm about 2 weeks sober, and I start making amends. And, you know, and I made amends to my mom, and I made amends to my stepdad. And that's when I began to feel some change happen. You know, it was after this amends process started. You know, and then I started doing 10 and 11. He actually made me email him every night my 11th step. And then this random thing happened, right? So this other newcomer started coming to meetings with us. We started picking him up. He wound up not living far from where I lived. And my sponsor, we went to this meeting on a Friday night in New Orleans, and this guy got a big book. And my sponsor went to me and told me, go tell him you're going to read the book with him. And I'm like 27 days sober, right? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I thought you had to have a year or more to do that. And, because at the time in New Orleans, people were going around and saying you have to have a year or more sober to sponsor people. Right? Exactly. You know, that was the going thing, right? Like every single meeting, that was the announcement that was being made. You know, and my sponsor, when I said that, referred me to the Big Book, where Evie had 2 months sober when he carried the message to Bill. So I went up to this guy, right, and I told this guy, hey, I'm going to read the book with you. Here's my address. Show up to my house tomorrow at 9 a.m. Well, he showed up to my house at 8 a.m., an hour early. Right? And so, like, I started sponsoring this guy. My sponsor I have now tells me, you don't even get it until you give it away. And that's been my experience. You know, when I sat down with this guy for the first time, reading the book at, you know, my kitchen table, kneecap to kneecap, right? That's the first time that I can look back and be like, God is, right? Like, that's the first moment where I actually felt a power greater than myself, you know? And it didn't have to be, you know, the same higher power that my sponsor had, and it didn't have to be the same higher power that my parents had, you know, or that my sister or my brother or whatever had, right? But I felt something finally. I felt a nearness to something, you know? Didn't know exactly what it was yet, right? But I felt something. You know, and I remember after that, like, I was going to a book study at a treatment center, and my sponsor was picking me up with some of his sponsees, and we'd go to this treatment center every Saturday morning to this, you know, do a step study. And, you know, I started talking about it, right? And it was like, as I'm talking about it, right, like, I get emotional, you know? And again, like, it's like, I finally felt like I belonged even more, right? Like I finally felt like I had a place even more in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and since then, like, Alcoholics Anonymous has become my home. You know, like, there are so many people, especially in this room tonight, that mean the world to me. You know, that have been there for me the last 8.5 years that I have been sober, you know, through so much stuff. And about 6 months sober, my mom almost died, right? And I had 2 sponsees at the time, and both of them were on fifth steps, you know? And I got to meet with them, and I got to get out of myself for a bit. I also didn't have a car, but both of them had vehicles, and they took turns bringing me to the hospital every day to see my mom, you know? Again, like, you know, like Sydney said when she introduced me, you know? My sponsor now tells me that God never puts 2 people together to help just one. Again, that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I sponsor guys, like, I'm not just helping them, but they're helping me. And they're helping me probably even more than I'm helping them, you know? So at this time, right, like, my mom almost dies, and not religious, and I wasn't really that spiritual yet. But I go into the chapel at the hospital, and I go to pray, and I don't know where these words came from, but I ask God to make me of maximum service. I go downstairs to go smoke a cigarette, and there's a guy from a treatment center that I had just spoken at 3 days before, out there smoking a cigarette, and I was able to talk to him about what he was going through, and I was able to go back upstairs and be of service to my family. Right? Like, again, if that's not God, then I don't know what is. You know, at the time, the sponsor that I had, you know, I told him, like, if I wouldn't have prayed, that guy would have been there. And he's like, no, if you wouldn't have prayed, you would have seen what it was. You know? And at this time, I'd also sworn off white ball, right? Because the first time I was around AA, like, you know, I went to a bunch of white balls and did a bunch of white ball stuff, but, you know, didn't really stay sober, right? The Lacey Pond Shreveport was about to happen. And 2 people from my home group convinced me to go with them. And that Lacey Pond Shreveport showed me that I could still have fun, sobriety, especially when going through something. I dressed in drag, I danced, you know, right? We had a dance competition, and we should have won, but Arkansas. so I won because I got a sympathy vote because somebody got hurt on the way. So and then right after that was the World Conference in San Antonio. It was great. And I went to that. But here's how I got to go to that, right? Like, I had no money again, right? Like, I still wasn't really employed. I wasn't really doing much. And I didn't want to leave my mom because I didn't want to go for that long because she wasn't doing well, you know? My mom woke up from the hospital and asked me why I wasn't going. She told me that I needed to be there. So this other guy, you know, came and picked me up. No questions asked. Actually told me he was coming to get me. And they just provided for me to be there in that hotel room. And this other guy, this guy Tom Yu from Santa Fe, New Mexico, was there. And I started crying. And it was the first time that I cried in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I get emotional very easily. It was the first time that I cried. And Tom came up to me and he told me, you know, when we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, our souls are frozen. And as they begin to defrost, humanity comes in the form of tears. And so now anytime that I feel the tears come, I let them happen. Because I want my soul to be defrosted. At this time, too, I was involved in general service. My home group, I had a month sober, and my home group decided that I was going to be the alternate GSR. And then the GSR decided he wasn't going to anything, so I went to everything. I went to area assemblies, and I went to, you know, district meetings, and, you know, got involved in general service, and again, like, general, like, being involved in general service saved my ass at that time. And, then, you know, so I get a year sober, a little bit more, and I didn't have any sponsees, and wasn't really doing anything in general service, and wasn't really doing much. At 18 months sober, I'm on my way to work, and all of a sudden, like, this thought popped into my head that, like, hey, it might be a good idea to just drive my car into the sidewall of the interstate, you know? And when that thought crossed my mind, it scared the living hell out of me this time. And I did something different than I normally did, right? And I started looking for a new sponsor because I wasn't meeting with my sponsor, you know? I couldn't think of anybody to be my sponsor. So I go to area assembly, and I'm sitting next to my DCM at the time. And she suggested her boyfriend, Greg, you know? And I couldn't think of a reason why not. Everybody else, I had a reason why not, you know, why I wouldn't want them to be my sponsor. You know, and I couldn't think of a reason why not to have Greg. And Greg's been my sponsor since that day. Since a week later, actually, because I went to the district meeting and I told Greg he was actually going to be my sponsor. I didn't ask him. and we met, you know, and this time, you know, I had a fresh lap of the steps with them. You know, and this time when I did a third step, I felt something different. You know, like, I felt the third step promises happen. You know, and this time when I shared a fifth step with him, I felt the fifth step promises happen. You know, like, I felt like I could look the world in its eye. You know, I felt amazing. And new amends happened. And, you know, again, I felt more change after that. And then on December 10th, 2012, I experienced my first death in Alcoholics Anonymous from somebody dying that was a member of AA that I was very, very close to. One of my close friends. And I got that phone call, and the only thing I could think to do was go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And before that meeting, I prayed, and I asked God to give me somebody to help. And I met this guy, Blake, that meeting. And I started sponsoring that guy that night, and at Dot's Diner, until about 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, we started going through the steps, and we did a third step at that diner. You know, and again, like, I gave him 5 days to do his fourth step. You know, and we went through the steps together, and I was able to get through my loss of Mike with having Blake in my life. And I continued new sponsor that guy for a while. You know, we became really close friends. He wound up getting a new sponsor at one point, and then he wound up leaving Alcoholics Anonymous and got involved in the church. And nothing against getting involved in the church, because when he was involved in the church, right, like, he was still doing great, you know, but then he stopped getting involved, and things happened. And, last year, Blake committed suicide. And Alcoholics Anonymous showed up for me. AA showed up. I'm going to jump back a little bit. It's an honor and privilege to be here in Atlanta, and I'm going to tell you guys why. 2015, I was suicidal. I had not really been meeting with a sponsor again, and I wasn't really working steps with anybody. And if there's anybody here that was involved with Surfy Paw in 2015, I want to thank you guys. What happened was I was looking up ways to kill myself online that wouldn't be painful. And I got a notification on Facebook that Surfy Paw was happening 2 days later. So I bought a plane ticket, and I came to Circuit Paw. People that know me know that I usually sit in the front and talk to everybody. You know, I'm very sociable. I sat in the back of that first night of that speaker meeting, all by myself. And this girl told her story, and she talked about how she wanted to die in Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's the reason why I wanted to die. They thought I had esophageal cancer, right? And I looked up the mortality rate of that, and it's not that great, you know? It turns out I didn't have it, right? But, so she talked about wanting to kill, like, not wanting to kill herself, but wanting to die in sobriety, right? Not that I hadn't heard that before, but it was the first time that I actually was able to listen to it, you know? And then another one of my friends was there that I had just met in Ireland a few months before. He talked to me and helped me get through some of that stuff. And that guy's name was John. John F. And I met so many friends at that conference, right? I made so many new friends. You know, it was amazing. That conference saved my life, right? So again, if you went to Surfy Paw when it was here in Atlanta, if you were a part of it, if you were of service to it, you know. Thank you, right? I am standing up here tonight because of that conference. So I called Greg up while I was at that conference, and I told him that I needed him to pick me up from the airport. I did inventory while I was on the airplane, and I shared a fist step with him. Here's another thing at that time. I was about 420 pounds. And, I had some outside issues going on, so I sought some outside help, you know? And if you think that you need to seek outside help, please do, because Alcoholics Anonymous is not a cure-all. And I got that outside help. It helped me out a lot. Started changing the way that I live and some of the things that I do. And my life started to get better. A few months after that, one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me is being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous happened. My little sister reached out to me to get sober. And she had been sober once before in AA. But this time she reached out to me, and what I did differently was I, you know, instead of me being the one to meet up with her, I picked her up and I let her meet with other women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got the hell out of the way. And, you know, it's pretty cool. You know, I get to see her stand today with 2 years sober. She's here. Woo! Yeah. So getting to be the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous is a pretty cool thing. you know, and back to, you know, so back to this last year, right? This last year has probably been the hardest year that I've ever had being sober, right? What it's taught me is that it's okay if you're 8.5 years sober, 7.5 years sober, 6.5 years sober, or if you're 22 to 32 years sober, right? That it's okay for, you know, you to be the hand that reaches out for AA's help, you know?
Hell yeah.
So yeah, Blake committed suicide. My best friend, right? My best friend committed suicide. Just so happened that Circuit Call in Pinellas County was the next week. Again, another Circuit Call helped me get through some pretty traumatic stuff in my life. You know, like those people showed up for me. And just let me be a part of their conference, right? Just let me just hang out and talk to people and have fun, you know? Got me out of myself. And again, no Alcoholics Anonymous showed up, right? Like, AA has shown up constantly in my life. For every single thing that I have been through, Alcoholics Anonymous has been there. And they show up in droves, right? Like, January 3rd of this past year, I get a phone call from my sister. Her and my nephew were living with me, and her boyfriend, Colin. And I get a phone call from my sister. My house was on fire. I personally lost everything, right? Physically, right? All the, not physically, but all the material stuff, right? Here's the thing, though. Within 30 minutes of people finding out that my house was on fire, I was getting phone calls from people and I was plugged on. I had some friends from Pinellas that happened to be at the airport leaving, right? And called me to make sure that I was okay. Friends from Nashville calling and making sure that I was okay. Means the world to me. You know, friends from New York calling and making sure that I was okay. And they're all in this room tonight, right? If they're all here tonight, you know, these people I have grown close to, right? Like, Alcoholics Anonymous has shown up in my life. My cousin started a GoFundMe for me. I felt very weird about, like, taking money from people, right? And I talked to my sponsor about it, and I was like, I'm just going to give all this money back. And my sponsor told me it was the most selfish thing I could do because this is the only way that some people knew how to help at that time. And another thing happened. My best friend, Blake's mom, showed up at my house that night. She organized a bunch of donations and all kinds of stuff. I was talking to my sponsor's wife about it. And she was like, you gave her a chance to be a mom again. You know? And now I purposely spend one day a week with that woman, you know, because that's what you guys have taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous to do. Crazy thing is, like, I told my story a week after my house burned down at a conference in Louisiana, you know, and again, being of service in Alcoholics Anonymous got me out of myself and let me just be a part of, you know. You know, these last 8.5 years, right? These last 8.5 years, some things have happened that are great, some things that happened that are shit, you know. lost a lot of people. You know, I have lost a very fair amount of people. You know, because not everybody who comes in these rooms gets it. You know? And my sponsor, you know, my sponsor told me the first time, you know, when Mikey died from an overdose. You know, he told me, you're either going to die with this or you're going to die from it. What is your choice to be? You know, today I want to die with this. I don't want to die from this. You know, so what does that look like for me, right? Like, I continue to sponsor guys. You know, I continue to have a sponsor. I continue to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I continue to be of service outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, after my house burned down, you know, because of AA, I got an apartment in 2 weeks and it was fully furnished because of people in Alcoholics Anonymous just showing up, right? Every time something has happened, people in Alcoholics Anonymous have just shown up. You know, if you would have told me when I got sober that, hey, Chris, we're going to remove the obsession to drink from you, and that's going to be it, probably would have been okay with that, right? But here's the thing, like, I sold myself so short, right, thinking that, right? Because what happened was, I get sober, and I get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get a sponsor. You know, and I start working steps with that sponsor, and I, you know, get a home group, and I start making friends in that home group, you know. I join a bunch of white ball committees and bids and host committees, right, and I make family, you know. What happens is that I have a life worth living now, right? I have a life that means the world to me. And again, there's so many people in here that are my family. You know, the family that I get to choose today. You know, I love all of them. So if you're new here, right? And I know there's some new people here. Get a sponsor. Find a group of people that you can relate to. Do something different. You know, most importantly, know that, like, at least for me, right, at least for me, that what has helped with me is that knowing that I have a place where I belong, right, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's all I have tonight. Thank you, guys.